These leaders forever changed Reform Judaism. They were devoted to the ideals of America. They were giants of compassion and equality for all people. This week, as I've said, we mourn the passing of Alvor Spann at age 95. And we think of Al and this extraordinary group. Tonight, I want to remember three of these figures: Alvor Spann, Kivi Kaplan, and Rabbi Eugene Lippman. It's important to set the stage because when we have all of the discussions about different political views and the Jewish community today, they lived in a very different era, a moment unique in Jewish history. They saw the virulent anti-Semitism of the 1930s, which was exemplified by the radio broadcasts of Father Coughlin. They were involved in defending the world for freedom during the global devastation of World War II, the catastrophe of the Holocaust, the birth and near extinction early on of Israel, and the struggle for civil rights in America. I'm sensitive to the way that we share many different beliefs and opinions here at TBS. Tonight, I want to focus on these leaders and that moment of time that they represent and how they shape the Jewish world and how they can shape our world today. Alvor Spann was brought to the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, now the URJ, by Rabbi Maurice Eisendrath in 1953. He, along with Rabbi Lippman, were given a new task for the Reform movement. They were encouraged to go out to synagogues around the country and to talk with them about starting social action committees. During the 1950s and 60s, Al and Jean, they traveled to temples all around the country. And Al was one of the great civil rights leaders during the beginnings of the Montgomery bus boycott, the troubles in Birmingham, the march in Selma, the garbage strike in Memphis. In 1964, when Dr. King sent out the call to the CCR, Al was with a group of 16 rabbis, including Rabbi Dan Fogel, who I worked with for 18 years, and they answered the call. Now, here's an aside from one of the other great rabbis of that generation, Rabbi Arnold Jacob Wolf, who I had the honor of knowing. That Rabbi Wolf wrote to his congregation after St. Augustine and said, only 16 rabbis went. We had a whole conference full of rabbis. The involvement in the struggle was not universal. That there were often times when rabbis in the South would ask Al not to be there because of their fears. Aaron Hurt Mannheimer, in an article about Al, quoted Al as saying, "We came as Jews who remember the millions of faceless people who stood quietly watching the smoke rise from Hitler's crematoria. We came because we know that second only to silence, the greatest danger to a human being is to lose faith in another's capacity for good." Al was instrumental in creating the Religious Action Center, the director of the Commission on Social Action, senior vice president of the UAHC. And when I was looking through and reading today, one of the eulogies was given by Rabbi David Stern. And Rabbi Stern is rabbi at Temple Emmanuel in Dallas. His father was really one of the rabbi's rabbis, Rabbi Jack Stern, and Rabbi Stern Sr. and Al were best friends. They pledged to give the eulogy at each other's funeral, no matter how difficult that might be. And in the eulogy, David said that he and his siblings were there representing their father. And you can get a sense of Al's spirit from these words. He was a liberator, not of the poor finally from their poverty, nor of the hungry from their hunger, nor of African Americans finally from the shackles of American racism, though God knows he tried. He was a liberator because he freed the Torah from the Ark, the prophets from the quiet pages of bound Bibles, the light of justice from the dainty near Tamid. He simply refused to leave the beating heart of Judaism trapped inside stained glass windows or musty halls. He brought Jeremiah to the Capitol, Isaiah to the jail cell in St. Augustine, and Micah to the conference table at the Religious Action Center. He did it with a pipe in his teeth and a smile on his face, and those expressive hands with his bald head shining like a beacon of social justice. Al, in an article, he was a columnist starting at age 92 online. He spoke about the dangers of demagogues, of anti-Semitism, of war. And through his presence, this combination of being an incredible gentleman, an amazing sense of humor, and a sense of what was right in the world, he brought to life the words, "Let justice well up as waters, and righteousness as a mighty stream." Kivi Kaplan was another pivotal leader. I didn't have the pleasure of knowing him, but, well, actually a quick survey. How many people other than rabbis or those who work at the Religious Action Center or their spouses have ever heard of Kivi Kaplan? Probably not a lot. So you see, or anybody who went to the Tikkun to Litakane. So let me tell you about Kivi Kaplan, and you're going to be absolutely amazed. He was born in Boston. His parents immigrated from Lithuania. He was a very, very successful businessman. He and his brothers took over their father's leather business and the tanneries. And Kivi's great-grandson spoke about his grandfather. He was interviewed. He talked about the legacy of civil rights. Said, "My great-grandfather was a civil rights leader back in the day. He was a fierce activist and advocate. He spent 9 years as the president of the NAACP, and in 1965, marched with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in Selma. They were jailed together several times, and during the Freedom Summer, he went to Mississippi to register black voters. He was an organizer who traveled the country selling lifetime memberships in the NAACP. Kivi, who was born in 1904, was from a long line of Jewish figures in the civil rights organizations. And he continues, and this is a story that many have told. Family lore tells that he felt compelled to get involved because during his honeymoon in Florida, he attempted to go inside a country club, but the sign outside read, "No Jews or dogs." When he returned to his car shocked, Kivi's African-American driver told him that he understood how he felt. They didn't even need to put blacks on the sign. The driver wasn't even allowed outside without an escort. That was the incident that compelled him to act. He believed firmly in the Jewish idea that we're all created in God's image. And so at age 28, he joined the NAACP to help promote equality for all. He was one that ensured the financial viability of the NAACP. He's a benefactor of the reform movement. And again, he points to how people can respond to their times, that he was one who saw that bigotry against one person is bigotry against all, that justice should apply to everyone. So Rabbi Eugene Lippman was one of my rabbis. He worked for the UAHC and then was the rabbi of Temple Sinai in Washington. Gene was born in 1919 and volunteered as an army chaplain in 1944, shortly before the end of the war. He met the survivors of Buchenwald. He organized Jewish soldiers to provide food and clothing. He also worked with the survivors of Theresienstadt. It's a story that Gene was approached one day by a man who looked Jewish, but was there. Something about them clicked, and the man said to Gene, "Amcha," in Yiddish, meaning, "Are you part of the people?" And Gene responded back in Yiddish that he was Amcha. And the man said, "Thank God, there are still Jews in the world." Gene was almost court-martialed. He was a participant. He helped arrange trucks to smuggle Jews from Europe during the illegal immigration into Israel. And this concern for Amcha led, after the war, to a concern for all humanity. At Temple Sinai, the position was that any idea can be represented on the Bima. It was an open pulpit. But I think the most powerful example of this is the support that Gene gave to Raphael Lemkin. He was a Jewish refugee from Poland. Much of his family was lost during the Second World War. Lemkin created the term genocide, and he worked for the International Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. It was finally adopted by the United Nations in 1948. When American leaders, when the Jewish community put Lemkin off to the side, it was Rabbi Lippman who provided him with a secretary with space at the headquarters of the Union for American Hebrew Congregations. Rabbi Eugene Lippman, from the experience of the war, was also a man for all people. So conclude, in 2007, you can find it online, the quality is not great, but Al Vorspan and David Saperstein were interviewed at the URJ Biennial. And Al was asked, what was the most memorable moment from your career? Now think of the life that he had. He was an officer during World War II. He was an activist. And the moment he chose was November 13, 1961, when a Torah scroll was presented in the Rose Garden to President Kennedy. This was also part of the dedication of the Religious Action Center. For many years, that scroll was housed in the Religious Action Center, and it's now in the Kennedy Library and Museum. As we think of the challenges, and as we think of the way these three men, that was an era of men, and now we could name innumerable women as well, responded. They literally created a new vision, as Rabbi Stern said, of taking Judaism from the synagogue, from the dusty tome, out and into the world. And so Rabbi Maurice Eisendrath, these are the words that he shared with President Kennedy during the presentation. And you can see the scroll, the picture of the presentation. Rabbi Eisendrath, as the Torah was presented to President Kennedy, said, This parchment contains not only sacred words, but words for which all have sacrificed their lives. This nation was established on these words and the immutable human truths which they express. These truths remain our most potent weapon, today's great struggle between those who have staked their lives and the future on the value of the human spirit breathing free in a universe guided by divine laws. And those who seek to bring the creative human personality under the awesome weight of a juggernaut of tyranny, you, Mr. President, are the inspired and inspiring leader of those committed to the moral mandate set forth in the words of this sacred parchment. You should like to have that as the big finish, but you need a P.S. because this is what Al talked about. P.S. As Kennedy was holding the Torah, Arthur Goldberg, who was then the Secretary of Labor and who had become a Supreme Court Justice, said, "Mr. President, you're holding a Torah and you're not wearing a yarmulke." As Al said with a glint in his eye, Kennedy responded, "I'm reform." Shabbat Shalom.